Hello and welcome to the Pints and Penalties Scottish Football Podcast. I'm your host Rory West, and on the podcast this week I'm joined by Cameron Christie.
Hello.
And Harry Tremaine.
Hello everyone.
So back, first podcast of 2021. I hope all you listeners had a good new year, whatever you did. I don't imagine you did an awful lot on that. But what we're going to do is, while we went a wee bit quiet over the sort of festive period, we did mention on the last podcast that we were planning on coming back and just kind of looking over each Premiership side's how they got on over the festive period. So we're kind of counting it from the games on roughly the 23rd through to the games that were played on the 2nd of January. So, I mean, technically, I'm counting the festive period as until you take your tree down, as that's the 6th, isn't it, which would be tomorrow. So there we go, to solve any sort of festive issues. But heaps to go through. We're going to run through it in order of the Premiership table. So we're going to kick off with Rangers, who to start, they played four games over the festive period, and the three you probably they had to start with were relatively straightforward for them, I would say. While the performance levels probably dropped a wee bit in terms of sort of intensity across those three games, they still managed to get the results that they needed, all kind of hinging on that, or building up to that Old Firm game that was played just a couple of days ago. But just open up to either of you, how do you sort of judge Rangers' festive period up until the Celtic game?
Well, I think you kind of summed it up pretty well in terms of the intensity certainly has dropped, and, you know, performance levels aren't what they were certainly towards the start of the season. But if you're picking up 9 from 9, it's exactly what they need to do. They basically just need to keep picking up the wins. It sounds really obvious and straightforward, but that's the only thing they can do. I know Celtic clearly aren't at their best, but if you're just relentless picking up the points, then make it impossible for them. And then obviously we'll get on to the Old Firm game, I guess. But yeah, they've kind of set an impossible task for Celtic to kind of complete.
I think that it was always going to be a case then for Rangers just to get through this period of time, to get that kind of, now being able, a couple of weeks where they've got full weeks between games, because they have been playing since probably start of September. They have been playing, either Saturday, Sunday or Wednesday, Thursday. So it was inevitable that the levels of performance were probably going to drop off, and I think that we've probably noticed that across December, obviously, especially probably from maybe the Dundee United game through, obviously lost the cup game to St Mirren and came back from 1-0 down to beat Motherwell just before the period that we're talking about. But I mean, well, the performance have been there. If you're picking up results and keep piling the pressure on Celtic to keep getting the distance from them, then there's no real complaints. They've obviously been managing it through with a couple of injuries to sort of more key players like Brian Jacks, Scott Arfield. So to get through that with maximum points, you've just got to be absolutely delighted.
Yeah, I guess it's not as though they were coming through these games winning, like, all of them 1-0 and properly scraping the win. They are pretty convincing. I mean, you've got a 3-0 away to St Johnstone. The 1-0 win at home to Hibs, that was one where they probably were troubled more than they have been recently. But I guess we'll touch on this game a wee bit more later when we're talking about Hibs. It's just, I don't think Hibs really offered too much that would really have threatened Rangers. But one thing I kind of noticed is that we've credited Gerrard throughout the season for his rotation and how impressive that's been, but through the three games leading up to the Old Firm on the 2nd of January, he kind of opted to stick with a pretty similar team in all those games, and I'm not sure whether that was him thinking, right, okay, if all these players remain fit, this is the team I have planned for the Celtic game. So decided, right, I want to sort of gel these guys in, just so it gives us a chance, or a better chance for that Celtic game. Because it did seem a wee bit odd to me that he didn't rotate as much as he has done. But yeah, we might as well just sort of get to the Old Firm game now. It was, a lot of people said it's kind of a reverse of that League Cup final last season where Rangers dominated and Celtic came away with the win. But I'm not sure. I thought Celtic were pretty decent in the first half, but I don't think they really created an awful lot of, you'd say, great chances. I know the McGregor had to pull off a pretty decent save, but I'm not sure that the Celtic were too dangerous in that half.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking there, casting my mind back to the game, you can't really remember too many occasions where Rangers, and this kind of goes to show for Rangers for the entire season, they've only conceded 5 goals in 22 games in the league, and I don't think that's a coincidence. They don't seem to give up many high percentage chances, and Celtic haven't really been creating them. I think we'll get on to Celtic, but they've been a little bit better in recent weeks. But yeah, like you say, I mean, the save that McGregor makes, the one in particular, is from a shot from outside the box. So I think defensively, Rangers were well-drilled, well-set up to deal with the threats. Certainly weren't, I mean, you could never say that they were the better side in the game up until the red card, in my opinion. But yeah, they were dealing with the threats that Celtic posed pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I mean, I don't feel they ever posed too much of a threat. They probably were the team that were on top of things. But, I mean, it was, like I say, it was never too many gilt-edge opportunities that they created. It was more kind of shots from outside the box from, you know, the likes of Lee Griffiths. So, I mean, I don't think ever think Rangers were comfortable, but at the same time, Celtic didn't overly look too often like scoring in this game. I think Rangers there was a graphic in the first half, or maybe early in the second half, to say that the Rangers have sort of passed up more opportunities for, you know, for the opposition in the last couple of games. I think the Hibs game and the St Johnston game were both in there as well. But at the same time, there's not many of those opportunities that, like you say, are proper goal-scoring opportunities. So they largely kept them at bay without, you know, being quite on it themselves. I mean, McGregor, like I said, he only had the one, I would say, really, really good save to make. It's not quite this case where, you know, it was Fraser Forster, was like a brick wall in the League Cup final last year.
Yeah, I think the game kind of does hinge on the red card, and I thought in the build up to, or the lead up to the red card, it was probably one of the first times in the game where Tavernier actually managed to get on the ball and try and do something, sort of create a pass. And I mean, there should be too much debate over this red, to be honest. As soon as it happened, I thought, right, he's off. But I don't know if either of you disagree.
My personal opinion was that it was also a red. I think that there's probably an argument to be had. I've not actually watched it back since the game, but I do think that the goalkeeper potentially could have made it there before Morelos, given the pace on the ball and kind of the angle it's coming in from. But regardless, it's just kind of a silly thing to be doing in a silly part of the pitch, because he is by a fair distance the last man back. I don't think there's too much of an argument. And like I say, with the angle the ball comes round that, that's setting Morelos right in on goal. And for me, that's a definite goal-scoring opportunity.
Yeah, I'm the same with you guys. I definitely feel that the referee got it right, even if, you know, there's obviously maybe I scoped to say there that, I don't know, Marquez might have got across, Ayer might have got across. At the same time, Neil Gutton, he's not even trying to play the ball or anything like that. If he's not pulling back Morales, Morales gets the ball. Whether or not, because it's Morales against Celtic, is there a goal scoring opportunity? Is obviously that's questionable, but that can't really be running through a referee's mind. I think that Bobby Maddie made the right call here. And obviously that was obviously it was a bit of a game changer, because after that Celtic, you know, quite badly I felt dropped off. A couple of subs obviously kind of had to happen. You know, you can't really go the rest of that game with a back three of Frimpong, Laxalt and Ayer. So that change was obviously gonna have to be made. But I felt that kind of all the subs felt a bit wrong to me, that Lennon didn't really make the right substitutes, and didn't really allow them to get back into the game at all.
Yeah, I mean, we can touch on this Celtic a wee bit more when we're on them, but after the goal, I don't think Celtic really did too much, and Rangers kind of saw the game out, and you'd probably think now that it would take something that I don't think, some sort of drop-off that I probably would say I've never seen anything of the sort before, if Rangers were to lose the league now. I mean, what is it, 19 points? Even though Celtic have three games in hand, you wouldn't back this Celtic team to essentially win the remainder of their games. You certainly wouldn't back them to beat Rangers in either of the remaining two Old Firms. Surely it's done now. We've said it's done. We've said it's been done for a while, but yeah, you'd think it's probably over now. The league is Rangers.
It's as good as, I would say. It's as good as, I think. When they get, you know, look at these couple of guys back into fitness, such as Jack and Arfield, they bolster that team even more. We saw what they've come through recently, that, you know, a relatively tough run of fixtures. I mean, you know, Hibs would have been looking to try and get something. St Mirren on a decent run of form, and obviously the pressure cooker that is the game against Celtic. So you've come through that, no more injuries, maximum points, zero goals conceded. You've got to imagine that's got to give you all the confidence in the world to go on and keep this unbeaten record going and go and get that league title.
And as you say, Rory, I think with the extra breaks that they're going to be allowed with the kind of only weekend fixtures for the next couple of weeks at least, that'll definitely benefit them, hopefully, in terms of just the sharpness and performance levels.
Mm. So we'll move on to Celtic now. There's kind of two sides to how you judge their winter period. There's the on the pitch stuff, and then there's the more recent off the pitch stuff, which has done them absolutely zero favours. But we'll start with the on the pitch stuff, and there was a lot of sort of optimism I found around the three results in the lead up to the Old Firm for Celtic. And off the back of the cup final, which we did talk about on our last podcast, but I don't really get where that was coming from. If even though Celtic have been pretty poor so far this season, you'd expect them to beat Ross County at home. I know they already lost that game in the League Cup, but you'd still expect that. Hamilton away, same goes for that, and again Dundee United at home. These are all three games you'd expect Celtic to comfortably win. And just because they've been poor throughout the season so far, it doesn't say that these are automatically tough games now for Celtic. I think people might have gone a wee bit overboard and thinking, right, okay, Lennon's turned things around. He hadn't, and I mean the result in the Old Firm game probably shows that.
I mean, I think that performances had improved. But you know, that's, like you said, that's not saying an awful lot, because performances were absolutely dreadful for the best part of what, 2 months. Obviously, it came with a bit of, I think maybe a little bit of optimism with the change in shape, and obviously giving different players opportunities, bringing in Turnbull, bringing in Sorrow, Griffiths comes back in. They've gone with the kind of the 4-4-2 diamond. you know, Shane Duffy dropped. that being probably a major part of it as well. So I can see where the optimism came, but it was kind of short-sighted. Like you said there, they were beating teams that they should be comfortable beating anyway. You know, we said, but two of the games were against what then bottom of the league twice. And then a Dundee United side that aren't going to attack you at all. So, yeah, and yeah, I can see why they got optimistic, but it was probably the wrong sort of optimism because Rangers are still streaks ahead of them. And even though, you know, Rangers didn't play well on Saturday, you know, they still managed to get the result, and it's something that Celtic have been doing, and it's almost like a kind of that game, maybe like a sort of passing of the torch type game. But yeah, it's, for me, for Celtic, it's absolutely done, and they've only really got the Scottish Cup to play for now.
Yeah, I think that, like you said, Christy, I think the performances were better, and I know we kind of talked down Celtic's performance in the Old Firm game, but I did quite like it, especially first half, in terms of just the tenacity to win the ball back higher up the pitch. And actually, in terms of limiting Rangers, I can't think of, especially in the first half, any real occasions where they were able to kind of push their fullbacks on, string together a nice passing move in Celtic's half. And to be fair, I think they do deserve a lot of credit for that. I think guys like Soro really helped them do that, able to win the ball back in better areas. But yeah, I think it just goes to show that in previous seasons, you'd be looking at a 2-0 win against Ross County, a 3-0 win away at Hamilton, and well, I know they haven't played Dundee United recently, but 3-0 win against that sort of opposition, and you probably think like they wouldn't have needed to play particularly well to get those results in previous seasons. So I guess that kind of just marks the sort of drop-off that we've seen this season.
We mentioned when we're talking about the Old Firm there in terms of Rangers that the game kind of hinged on Beaton's red card, and I guess you can kind of trace this back to what we've talked about throughout the season and the recruitment, and that, I mean, you wouldn't really say, I know he's dropped into centre-back quite regularly of recent, but I still wouldn't say that I'd be overly comfortable if I was a Celtic supporter that Beaton's sort of my starting centre-half in an Old Firm game. And then yeah, that just goes back to sort of bringing in Shane Duffy, who probably isn't anywhere near the level I thought he'd be, and that's just been such a long-term problem that Celtic have failed to solve. And I mean, when Duffy came on Saturday, he was just an absolute car crash. You could have even argued he should have been sent off for a pretty wild tackle on Kent. I think you quite enjoyed his performance, Haz. You had a wee nickname for him, didn't you?
Yeah, Sugar Shane Duffy. Yeah, I quite enjoyed that one. Yeah, look, he hasn't lived up to, even as a neutral, hasn't lived up to my expectations. I thought at least in terms of a set-piece attacking threat for Celtic, he'd be effective. That's what he was good at Brighton and is for Ireland. But yeah, it's just quite funny to see just to see what he's up to. That tackle's really bad. I don't think it's a red card, but you know, it's just kind of one of those where I don't know exactly what he's thinking, but it just feels like, oh, I'm going to try and appeal to my teammates and the fans watching at home to show I really care, but I don't think they care that you care, to be honest.
The tackle reminds me a bit of that one, must have been the first one at Ibrox last season when Celtic won 2-0, the Jordan Jones one. It kind of reminded me of that. It was like the ball's gone, you've just totally wiped them out for no reason. Almost just sort of eye to appeal to nobody, to appeal to people who already don't like you and think you're shit. I mean, you said there, there's no way that Nir Beaton should be in that position to get sent off anyway. I mean, he's probably not even good enough to be in the squad these days. You know, as a midfielder for sure. and even then, as a centre half, it's a bit sketchy. But like I said, my thing with that game was the substitutes. They brought off Griffiths to bring on Duffy. Thought that was probably the wrong move. I think that you'd have been better off taking off probably Sorrow, who was on almost a one man mission to end up getting himself sent off, and go with that kind of 4-3-2 that Rangers went with when Morelos always used to seem to get himself sent off. You know, they wouldn't think about putting on another striker, they would just put two players sort of almost not quite inside forwards, but they would track back the fullback if he went forward that side. I think that would have been a much better approach for them than what they did, and left Edouard just isolated up front and nothing stuck at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, what I've not kind of understood is that was a must-win game for Celtic, like the win or bust, and they've failed. And there just seems to be a lot of, yeah, but they played well. And it's like, well, this result was the be-all, or this game was the be-all and end-all of their season. They've lost, it's over. But there doesn't seem to be, I guess they've almost used the whole Dubai stuff as a little masking trick for that, because I've just been a bit sort of confused about that. But yeah, we'll kind of finish off with the Dubai stuff. That's just wild. It's as crazy as it gets. It's just so sort of self-entitled. It's just madness when you've got the whole country in lockdown and they're just still cutting about getting steaming in Dubai. Just, I don't even know what to say, to be honest.
It's just a mindless, like, from every standpoint. Like, number one, if you were winning the league at a canter and you went away for some R&R, which is what some people have suggested it's for, like, maybe you could sort of understand that, but even then, in the current circumstances, it's like you described it earlier in the week, Christy, tone deaf, to say the least. But also, you're having a disaster of a season. You should be working the players extra hard back at home on the training pitch. Never mind taking them away to Dubai. It's like, oh, I don't understand it. I don't think that it makes any sense. To be honest, it wouldn't make sense in normal times, but certainly not in this COVID era. It's just mindless.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, it's obviously the COVID era, the fact that they've, you know, pushed the game back to Monday when they're playing Hibs. And it's, I mean, like I said, this is all, well, it was booked here, but, you know, a lot of folk have had things booked over, what, the past 9 or 10 months, and have had to cancel it and had to make other plans. Surely Celtic can go 1 year without, you know, a jolly out to Dubai for a week. It just doesn't look good whatsoever. And then you just see the picture of Brown and Lennon kind of tanning pipes in a sun lounger, and you think, Where's the sort of the responsibility and the I can't think of the word, but it's just a terrible, terrible look. I said this earlier, it's just totally tone deaf from a club who have kind of been like that for pretty much all season, really.
Yeah.
Is it really worth it for a week as well? That's what I don't understand.
What I kind of thought of is, right, okay, so when it comes to these winter breaks, it's usually, well, I know for sure Aberdeen, Rangers and Celtic often go over to the sort of Middle East. Neither of the other two are, so surely Celtic should just have read the room and thought, right, this probably isn't a good idea. If there was one club that sort of deserved a break, it's not Celtic. And as you said, if they stayed in Scotland, surely it would have been easier for them to have like longer sessions, because surely the players wouldn't have to, like, they wouldn't have to give up a pitch or something like that. I don't know, but yeah,
I doubt too many people are out there using their pitches at the minute anyway.
Maybe the sort of hotel guests are better off using the pitches than Lennon's mob. But
I mean, they're gonna have to obviously get a special exemption from when they come back from not having to quarantine as well.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it was his earlier sort of Lando Norris, along with one driver, he's out there sort of doing his own kind of like training camp type thing, and you imagine it's a similar setup where, you know, he's within like a close-knit group of people, and, you know, he's managed to test positive for symptoms for it, and there's nothing to say I mean, that's not to say that it wouldn't have happened here, but to go away somewhere in the middle of a pandemic for what's like a kind of a little jolly in the sun bit of training, it's just really not a good look. And I mean, just smacks of entitlement that they really, especially at this present moment, they don't deserve at all.
Mm. So we'll move on to Aberdeen now. Doesn't get much better. This was quite a painful festive period, especially if you put yourself through each of these games.
Thankfully, there's only three of them.
Yeah, well, I actually noted that the only positives you could have taken out of this or festive period for Aberdeen were they managed to get a win against St Johnstone, and that the Livingston game was actually postponed because they probably would have lost that game. So, but they're sort of going too downbeat. It's really bleak for Aberdeen. The style of play is just completely fallen off a cliff. It's totally back to what they were doing at the start of 2020. So blunt in attack, just so slow. And fine, they're doing okay defensively. They're keeping some clean sheets, but there are still mistakes popping up here and there. And whether that's sort of defending set pieces or just in open play, Chrissy, I imagine you'll have some thoughts on this, so I'll let you sort of take over.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that's the thesaurus for the word bland. Really, you just throw all those different words in there: boring, uninspiring, dull. It's a team devoid of any identity, any creativity. Obviously we've spoken about it as well, the lack of a mobile striker. But even then, I mean, I've thought when Cosgrove has come in, he's looked okay. But playing with Curtis Main, he just doesn't cut it. And I mean, he's basically being picked because he works hard off the ball. And if you're picking that as your striker at a club the level of Aberdeen and the aspirations of Aberdeen in games against teams in the bottom six, that's really, really poor. I can understand, for instance, Hamilton picking somebody up front against Rangers who's going to work hard, going to put the centre-halves and the full-backs under pressure. But for Aberdeen to do that against a team in the bottom six, come on. Pick some, as well, like what Gordon Strachan does, I'd imagine part of it's to do with defending set pieces and things like that. It's really quite baffling. And I was in favour of this sort of 3-4-3, but it's not producing those opportunities that it was, 2-3 months ago. Maybe need to look at a change in shape there. But it's really, really uninspiring at the minute, and it's just painful to watch, really.
I've brought up an online thesaurus, so what do you want? Blah, dull as dishwasher, water, flavourless, wimpy, milk and water, nerdy, it's certainly not nerdy,
wishy-washy,
there we go.
It has to be,
vanilla.
I was going to say vanilla, well, I quite like vanilla ice cream and things like that. I mean, don't like watching this team play, so maybe not the best one, but it's just really, really boring. And I'm kind of sick fed up of saying it all the time, but it's just so, so dull, and time for some sort of change. We watched Aberdeen Dundee United at the weekend, and it's just two managers who just aren't trying to win a game of football, and it just makes for an absolute shocker of a game.
Yeah, it says something when the best Aberdeen related news is Ronald Hernandez getting to go home and see his family. this has been dreadful. I think, to be fair, with the 3-4-3, it worked when you had players capable of a bit of interchanging, a bit more fluidity up front. Obviously, injuries haven't helped. Not going to go down the Derek McInnes book of excuses, but it's just become far too rigid in that shape. So, sort of agree that given the current personnel, there probably needs to be a change. But yeah, just it's gone super negative. And the only real positive for Aberdeen is if you're looking elsewhere in the league, really.
Yeah, I just find with going forward that you made the point a few weeks ago, Haz, that Aberdeen probably haven't played well since Marley Watkins got injured. Now, I just don't think either Cosgrove or Maiden suit a 3-4-3. I don't think either are capable of... I mean, maybe Cosgrove's capable of making intelligent runs sort of into spaces. Maiden certainly isn't. I don't think either are capable of sort of making the runs that Watkins did where other players could... or created space for others, for players like Hedges, Wright, sometimes even McCrory. I just think, as you kind of mentioned there, Christy, he needs to decide whether... or needs to decide this month whether he brings in a new striker or ditches his 3-4-3. And I guess even if he does decide to bring in a new striker, it's got to be one that fits the 3-4-3 instead of just getting anyone available that doesn't necessarily fit your favoured formation.
But... Well, surely he'll be looking for someone who's played for us before.
Adam Rooney, I mean, he certainly wouldn't fit.
David
Gilmore? That's the only available options out there, is someone who's played for us before.
Yeah, you know, I actually think Goodwillie would probably suit it more than Curtis Main, but yeah, I'm not sure you want to be taking the punt on him. I mean, Stevie May would work it pretty fine, I reckon, but
he's got it going good at
the St Johnstone, so...
that's another thing I suppose we could get onto, because there's no point in speaking too much about the football, because it's painful. But you know, the supposed and the rumoured re-signing of Gary Mackay-Steven, it just, this is all those words, and it just screams of being so unimaginative. I mean, when you're basically your signing policy and your scouting partner, it's just former players. I mean, if you think about the summer, you know, Greg Lee comes back in, Tommy Hoban, Johnny Hayes comes back. So there's three players that you've already had at the club before that you're signing. I think that Hayes has probably been a success. Hoban has as well. Lee, less so. But, I mean, you know, GMS, who's maybe 30 now?
Yeah, 30.
And you've got guys there like Scott Wright, like Ryan Hedges, McLennan. You know, you could maybe even throw somebody younger who's obviously out alone, and Ethan Ross into that as well. And you think, do you really need to be bringing back Gary Mackay-Steven? Listen, I like Gary Mackay-Steven, and I think you probably would be all right, but it's just not what... You know, you are looking for something to kind of excite you, and to bring back a guy who's just spent the last 2 years out in the States, who was a little bit hit and miss, isn't really the answer to almost turn it around your kind of dull season to being a bit more of an exciting one.
I think we better move on from Aberdeen before we make ourselves even more upset, but I'm not sure it gets much better because we're moving on to Hibs.
This is more enjoyable for me.
Right, okay, why don't you let rip on Jack Ross's side?
I think the final is Jack Ross's total footballing Edinburgh Hibernians. What a rubbish festival. I mean, I was doing, we were talking about Aberdeen being bad, but this one, really bad. Fairly uninspiring one against St Mirren, then on to that Rangers game that we mentioned earlier, where you know, it was the sort of the Hibs moral high ground win. But one of our players played well. And then
I will stick up for that. I thought Joe Newell was really good in that game, and I quite enjoyed his performance. But yeah, it was quite a sort of Scott Allen pass in a 6-1 defeat,
yeah,
sort of stuff.
That's
but
exactly how I felt about it. And actually, when we were speaking about Celtic earlier and saying that, you know, like, oh yeah, but we played well, I thought that was taking it from the wee brother in Hibs. But yeah, followed up by the shambolic results, really. Home games against Ross County and Livingston, and you've not scored and conceded 5. That's quite embarrassing, especially when, like we said, you know, Celtic have been, have been faltering, obviously didn't get the result. Aberdeen haven't exactly been excelling. This is maybe Hibs' time to show people that, you know, that they are there to be taken seriously. And it's just not there at the minute. I mean, any time that, you know, they build up a little bit ahead of steam and then they go and chuck a couple of results like that. And I mean, there's no disgrace going to Ibrox getting beat, but the two home games against Ross County, who hadn't won a league game since, wasn't it September? And Livingston, who notoriously are quite bad away from home, even for that, has sort of changed recently. It's really quite bleak, and it kind of doesn't answer any of the critics, I don't think, for, you know, the critics of Jack Ross and the things people like to sort of poke at him.
The thing about Jack Ross, though, that is kind of getting on my nerves is, and I don't mean this in a patronising way at all for Hibs, but isn't fourth improvement for them, really? Because last season they were in seventh. I know it was a curtailed season. It would be definitely patronising for me to say, well, top half would be an improved season for them. But surely getting back into Europe is a good season for them. I know that Aberdeen look vulnerable, to say the least, this season, and there have been opportunities for them. But ultimately, like, if he were to finish in fourth this season, I don't think that's a bad season for them. However, though, if you look specifically at the last two games, I think that his tweaking of the system, kind of shoehorning players into certain positions, like playing Nisbet out wide, for example, it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't suit the squad that he's built up and that he's kind of established throughout the rest of the season. I think Hibs have looked so much more comfortable playing a back 3/5, however, whichever way you want to look at it, and abandoning that just hasn't suited them. They looked hopelessly out of their depth against Livingston, which is alarming. So that's the area of criticism that I'd definitely be levelling at Jack Ross.
Ross County's last away win was, 19th of September, 1-0 against St Johnston. So you go, it was September, the last league win. But I get where you're coming from with the fourth place. I remember I did the sort of blog post at the start of the season saying that fourth would probably be a decent starting point for Hibs. And there's almost like a parallel I've found with Aberdeen and Hibs, in that sort of Hibs have this League Cup semi-final without any of the Old Firm in Ross's first full season, a bit like McInnes did in his first full season. End of the day, you probably wouldn't have expected Aberdeen to get pipped to sort of the third or second spot that year by Motherwell, but Hibs are probably going to end up getting pipped by Aberdeen for third. But yeah, I think if Hibs did end up finishing third and say like 6 points or so off Aberdeen, then they could probably say decent season. But you just kind of need to look at Aberdeen and think they're not great. Like, even though Hibs, I know Aberdeen have a couple of games in hand over them, Hibs have had a pretty shambolic festive period, yet they're still only 3 points behind Aberdeen, so that they are within touch and distance. They just need to sort of find a way to beat them, and then it's sort of game on. But one kind of thing I wanted to touch on with Hibs, and I guess Aberdeen, is that these are two clubs that have kind of pleaded poverty in a way throughout the season, yet they're both looking likely to go into the window in January and spending, and it's just, I'm not sure it's a great look how you can sort of complain about resources throughout the season, yet you're going to probably spend a wee bit of cash when it comes in January, despite being or having probably much larger budgets than the rest of the league. And it just kind of tells you that these are two pretty poor teams that they're needing to do that. But yeah, that Livy game, we'll touch on it more when we talk about Livingston themselves, but that was a right sort of mess of a performance from Hibs.
Yeah, I mean, all over the place, defensively, from a team who've been okay at the back. Obviously, the goalkeeper probably doesn't help. Barnes has obviously just gone back to, it was QPR, wasn't it?
Yeah,
QPR.
He's gone back there, so I'm sure Hibs fans won't be that Bullard, will be seeing the back of him. But I mean, yeah, it's some of them are just, they're so basic goals. Obviously, we'll get on to the Livingston and one as well. I still don't think we've got the right blend at all in midfield. Newell's been decent, but you need to have somebody in there that's a bit better. I mean, a lot of people, we've always spoken about Bogic, but Bogic can't pass a ball. I think his passing stats are horrendous, and this is even basic stuff.
He had a 60% completion rate against Livingston, which is just wild for a centre mid. He's not going to be playing too many like dangerous passes either.
What are you expecting him to do? Play 5-10 yard passes out wide to guys like Newell, to the strikers, and that's it.
Yeah.
And if it's that far off it. So I still think that's something they need to add. And yeah, I mean, I agree with Harry. I think a return to the sort of the 3-5-2, getting Nisbet and Doidge back through the middle together, beefing up the defence again. I thought that McGinn was actually pretty decent as that kind of right-sided centre-half. I think they need to go back to that kind of system again. I also just don't think that they've got the midfield combinations to kind of play this 4-4-2 to accommodate both Doidge and Nisbet as well.
Yeah, I thought in the Ross County game that County managed to sort of get between the lines or Hibs' lines too easily. So when I saw that they were playing Gogic against Livingston, I was right, okay, that kind of makes sense. But, I mean, it just didn't work at all. So, yeah, there's some massive issues in the sort of balance of midfield there, as you said. But we'll move on to Livingston, unless either you have anything else to add about Hibs.
I don't think so.
No. Right, so we'll move on to Livingston. I guess you could say outside of Rangers, probably the side who have had the best festive period, 3 games, 3 wins. I mean, Jamesy Mack of this parish has slated us on Twitter for not being too convinced of David Martindale when he was appointed originally. So he's thinking he's had the last laugh, but little does anyone else know how his online football manager save with us is going, so we'll keep that keep that private. Certainly not want to talk about the managerial situation, but yeah, I mean, in fairness, Livingston have been really impressive over these games. And as I mentioned, we were talking about Aberdeen, I wouldn't have been surprised if that game went ahead that they would have had 4 wins out of 4 in the way that they're going. But before we started recording, you still had a few doubts, and I guess we all kind of still had a wee bit of doubts around this Livingston team going forward. Are they all that, or is it still just a bit of a honeymoon period?
Well, yeah, so the thing that we're being criticised for is, and it's probably mostly me, because when he'd taken over a couple of games, and he's had good results, but I was questioning, when you look past the results, is it like they've improved the style of play, they've completely changed the way they're playing? And the answer to that is no. He's kind of, the thing you can see from Martindale so far is he's stuck with a 4-2-3-1, really straightforward system. He's actually stuck to a relatively similar bunch of players game to game, a fairly similar core from game to game. He's chopped and changed a little bit up front. And the other thing is, there's just been that traditional manager's bounce. The players are running for him hard. They certainly outworked Hibs in that game. But again, the things that I questioned were, and I think cast my mind back a little bit, when they played Dundee United, they were gifted goals in that game against Hibs. I mean, the second and third goals particularly, they were gifted those. It's a horrendous defensive set piece from Hibs for the second. And the third, I mean, both Porteous and Hanlon have a disaster at the back there. So I don't think, I still will stand by this. It's not like David Martindale's come in, suddenly become the best manager in the world and revolutionised Livingston's style of play. He simplified things. I think he's got a good reaction out of the players, which is good for him. The results have obviously been great. He's, you know, he's got a 100% record in 7 games, so you can't really argue with that. But I still will stand by the, my opinion is that this is a honeymoon period, and it's come at a good time for Livingston this season.
Yeah, I mean, when I was kind of doing a bit of research before the pod, I've seen you guys before we recorded that, I was kind of looking through some stats and stuff for Livingston, comparing the, well, these 3 games anyway, compared to the last 3 of Gary Holt's tenure. And I just couldn't find anything that was different in terms of whether it be shots, possession, whether the length of their passes, whether it be sort of long balls if they're going more direct. And it's all the same. And you would have, Livingston are kind of known as a bit of a direct team, but if anything, they're actually less direct in these last 3 games under Martindale. So it's the only thing I said that I picked out is that he's played a 4-2-3-1 in every game in the league anyway that he's managed, whereas Holt was kind of tinkering about whether it be 4 at the back, 3 at the back, or even 5. I think you can almost plainly put it down to just the players putting in more of a shift, maybe, like whether you say they want it more, or he's just instilled a bit more of belief in them. I don't know. But as you said, I don't think there's been a massive shift in the playing style.
No, it was always going to be the same. I think it was maybe going to be Livingston dialed up to 11 under David Martindale. But for, like you say, for just now, it is working. I know that we'll no doubt get Jamesy raging that we're all being a little bit pessimistic about things, but it's definitely working for just now. It's just interesting when they get that kind of tough period. I think as much as we've slagged it off, you know, Aberdeen have never actually lost down at Livingston sort of since they've come back up. They've got a couple of games against Celtic coming up as well, so there is a couple more difficult games to come, so we'll see how this honeymoon period continues, or if it comes crashing back down to earth or not. But from these results, these festive periods, I think only Rangers will have been more happy than Livingston.
I guess the only negative in terms of Livingston is, and it's not anything to do with Martindale, it's just how far away they are. It's 11 points they're off of Hibs, but I guess they are another side who have 2 games in hand over them, but it's just, it might just be too big a gap to claw back for Livingston. But we'll move on.
It's actually only 9 points. Sorry.
Oh yeah, so it is. Yeah. So yeah, I my maths was well wrong there, and that totally changed the dynamic. So if they win their 2 games in hand, with that one being against Aberdeen, I'm not sure who. I think the other one
Celtic.
Is it Celtic, because it seems as though they've got a double header against Celtic at the. In mid-January. So yeah, to be fair, yeah, as I said, that totally changes everything. So it could, you never know, if they continue this run, they could be looking at a cup final and aiming top 4 by the end of the month. But we'll move on to the last side in the top 6, which is somehow still Dundee United. Again, this is when we kind of enter the mixed bag territory. They started the festive period with a win over Kilmarnock at home. I wouldn't say it was the most convincing result ever. Then they get a late draw at home to Motherwell, go to Celtic Park where they're sort of routinely beaten, you'd say, and then pick up a decent point at Pittodrie, where I actually thought they might have had the better chances in that game. Shanklin's hit the bar pretty early on and had a decent shot saved by Joe Lewis towards the end, but still not a lot going forward for Dundee United. It's very, Chrissy, you've been pretty critical of their style of play and how sort of defensive it is, but they don't seem to be changing that anytime soon.
No, well, until they get to about 10 minutes to go, realise they're getting beat and go, oh shit, might actually need to go and get, try and get someone from this game. Which has happened, I'd say, you know, a good four, maybe five times over the past month. Or maybe not a month, 2 months or so. But it's just, it's quite dull, really. They've got players that are capable of being expressive, and I feel like I keep repeating myself for this, but they're just not allowed to do it. The guys, I mean, some of the games, you know, well, just when you look at the game against Kilmarnock, it's where they're able to go with a 4-4-2, they get the win 2-0, but you know, then they come up against Aberdeen, and no, Aberdeen, obviously you would consider them a better side than same with Celtic. They revert to a kind of, yeah, very, very defensive 3-5-2. And fair play to Shanklin for carving out a couple of opportunities for himself, because he's so isolated. But it's proper pragmatic approach. I think I tweeted during the game, this is, you know, Mickey Mellon was making Derek McInnes look like Marcelo Bielsa, how negative he'd set up Dundee United. And it's just, you know, almost fortuitous for Dundee United, because we've seen how badly they've defended the sim games, that Aberdeen created so little, because I think when they've been exposed defensively, they are quite bad. And again, that's still my worry, is that defensively they're not at it. And when you really don't have that great a defence, you probably shouldn't be too defensive.
It's an interesting one, Dundee United, because obviously as a newly promoted side, to be honest, if I look at the table right now, I'd probably say they're doing better than I expected them to. But yeah, the only problems I have with Dundee United is stylistically, like you, Christy, which at the end of the day, I suppose some managers will look at and say, that's not my job, my job's to get results. Maybe that's how Mickey Mellon feels, I'm not sure. But yeah, if you look at the actual points total that they've picked up from this period, you know, 6 points from their four games, pretty good, all in all. Or sorry, 5 points, excuse me. Especially with games against Celtic and Rangers in Rangers, Aberdeen in there. Yeah, I think the results not bad, the performances dull as anything else you're gonna see in the league. Yes. And I'm sure there's a large contingent of Dundee United fans who are frustrated with that. But it's a bit of a strange catch-22 situation, because, you know, you could get a manager who plays a slightly more expressive style, but then, you know, you might put yourself in a bit more danger. And I genuinely don't believe that this Dundee United squad is above that. But, yeah, I can see why that would be divisive, and for some people it's just not palatable at all. But yeah, as a neutral, I mean, it doesn't bother me that much, to be honest. But yeah, it's just a bit of a strange club to analyse.
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't have expected them to finish in the top six if you asked me at the start of the season. But if they do so, then it's a pretty decent achievement. You might get to a stage, if they do that, they might be on the receiving end of some pretty nasty defeats, I don't know, come the split. But I think they'd probably take the sort of prize money. I don't imagine there's a massive difference between sort of 6th and 7th, 8th, 9th, whatever, but I'm sure there is some extra cash that you would receive. But anything else to add on Dundee United?
I don't think so.
No.
Not for me.
So we've called an audible here, and instead of putting the podcast out as one whole, we're going to cut it into looking at the top six, and then the bottom six. The bottom six podcast will come out later on this week, just to save putting out one enormous podcast. So I hope that helps your listening, instead of just one enormous podcast. So as always, thanks for listening, and the bottom six review will be out later on this week.